This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
This story is insane to me. This take is insane to me. Gang violence is very clearly overtaking the city of Tacoma, but we're going to pretend that it's not, because I'm not sure why we're pretending otherwise. Maybe it'll scare people from moving there, and that's a concern. Maybe they don't want to freak out a whole bunch of people, because when you look at the statistics, they are still relatively low in a general sense. But violence is up in Tacoma, and it's three times higher than the statewide rate, according to the Tacoma News Tribune, quoting a gang assessment report. But for some reason, the spokesperson for Tacoma PD, Loretta Cool, who is an awesome person, love the work that she's doing. They should name a sitcom character after Loretta Cool, because that's just a cool name. But she's making a claim to the Tacoma News Tribune that they're not really seeing gang-related violence. Out of 87 homicides committed in Tacoma since 2015, only 6 are believed to be gang-related. But that's because of the way they're defining gang-related.
People who are identified as gang members are some of the people who are committing crimes.
Yes.
But the crimes are more interpersonal relationship-related, or just that individual that's committing a crime.
Okay. So we got gang members, meaning they have a membership in a gang. They're committing criminal acts, sometimes against one another, sometimes against others. But it's not related to the gang. Does that make it gang-adjacent crimes? I don't quite understand what she's saying here. She's saying these are gang members who are committing crimes, but it's not actual gang violence. That's a horrible take.
Though that person may be identified as a gang member, that doesn't mean that it's a gang-related crime.
Okay. Who is more likely to violently settle an argument, a sort of personal fight with somebody else who maybe is or is not in a gang? Who is more? Just, you can do this at home with me. Children, participate as well, because I'm going to teach you something really important here. It's just like basic comprehension. Who's more likely to violently settle a score? A gangbanger with a gun or your neighbor, the accountant? I'll give you 3 seconds to answer. 1, Mississippi 2, Mississippi 3, Mississippi. What did you choose?
I chose the gangbanger with a gun.
Yeah. Probably the gangbanger with a gun. Not the accountant, not the lawyer, not the doctor, but the gang member. The fact that they belong to a gang and they have access to weapons and they've shown previously a willingness to commit acts of violence probably means they're more susceptible to quickly using a gun or a knife or any form of violence with a weapon or their fists than the dude next door who happens to also just be an accountant who's equally angry with someone else. That we're downplaying that is ridiculous to me. And the reason why this sounds so silly to all of us is because they're being super specific in how they define gang violence.
Silver turf or sales or even I don't like the colors you're wearing and you're in the wrong area of town.
So that counts as gang violence. But if the gangbanger commits another act of violence that is not specific to this list, I guess they don't count that. I mean, fine. Okay. But it also doesn't mean that you guys are escaping a gang issue in Tacoma. They're gang members. I don't care how you're going to classify their acts of violence. If they're not in a gang, they're less likely to use violence to settle scores, right? If they're in a gang, they're more likely to use violence. And you look at some of the stats that the Tacoma News Tribune put out there in their story today, 87.5% of everyone arrested for homicide in 2018 was between the ages of 15 and 30. You know what that age range happens to be really good for? Gang membership. Also accountants, I suppose, if you're early on in your career. But gang membership, guys. There have been 3,568 serious assaults or drive-by shootings in the city since 2015. But you're telling me you guys don't have a gang violence problem. Why is it that we can't simply say we've got a gang violence problem? It is so important to actually address the problem. And the only way you can address the problem is by identifying it. If you do not identify this as a gang violence problem, you're not actually going to come up with solutions to go after that gang member who's committing acts of violence, but maybe isn't being specifically put into it by their gang. I don't know how else to say that. And we've had a similar situation in Seattle where you've got some city leaders refusing to use the term gangs because of some social justice cause, that it maybe demeans people or something. I don't care if it demeans you. I care that you're violently acting out in our communities. And we're not going to come up with any solutions if we're going to keep pretending, oh, well, I mean, technically he's in a gang. But, I mean, he didn't really, it wasn't a gang shooting. Oh, yeah? Okay. Where'd he get that gun? Well, from another gang member. They bought it on the black market. Oh, okay. But when he's in the gang, he commits acts of violence, maybe? Well, yeah, I mean, part of it, yeah. But here, it just didn't. Got it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So climate activists tried to shut down Washington, D.C. today, all in the name of lowering carbon emissions by jamming up traffic so cars were idling longer than normal. They decided to completely get in the way of some busy intersections. Oh, can we just like up the chanting game a little bit? Just give me something. Another thing. 1, 2, 3, 4. We demand climate justice. Like, okay. Just enough.
You need something new?
Just, you know, elevate a little bit. Evolve a little bit. We're using the same boring chants, and then you're wondering why. I mean, I get that it's hard to get everyone to get on the same page with a new lyric. I get it. But, like, put it online. Just put it in your stupid little Facebook page that you're going to put out there to identify the events going on. Just say, hey, just FYI, same general sound, but we're going to use a different lyric.
See, I would rather them, like, remix songs, like full songs, rather
I'm okay
than
with
just
that
doing,
too.
Like, nursery rhyme,
the
like,
problem is,
eight
here's the,
bars.
You're right, because I would agree. Producer Bate, you're 100% right. I would like that, too. The problem is, when they do that, it's usually even more gimmicky while they get, like, grandma singing it. And so you've got grandma singing a Drake song, which actually is a bad example, because most Drake songs can probably be performed by grandmas. But they're doing that kind of thing, like, oh, that's so edgy. It's not. It's not. Just stop. They took some vans out. They blocked traffic. My favorite part of this, these people thought they found a loophole. They're like, we're going to disrupt traffic, and this is how we're going to do it. Yes, we can leave a car or a van in the middle of the street, but of course it's going to be towed. But you know what they can't do? They can't tow it if we're still in the car. Police were all like, yeah, we're still going to tow it. And they went nuts.
This is not safe.
It's not safe. We're not going to let
them go to the car. This is not safe. This is not safe. This is not safe.
Get out of the street.
This is not safe to tow a vehicle with people on it.
It's not safe.
It's not safe.
Back on the sidewalk.
This is not safe to tow a vehicle with people on it. There are people on this van and they're towing the vehicle.
I love this.
You cannot do this.
The van with the people on the van.
That woman just loses it. The woman in the van just starts to break down and cry like, I found a loophole, I thought. But apparently I didn't. Stop it! And by the way, it's totally safe because they're moving the car at incredibly slow speeds.
I love the fact that they're yelling at the police instead of yelling at the person being like, hey, get off the van.
Yeah, get out of the van, you idiot. Yeah. If you think it's so unsafe, all you have to do is get out. But you thought you had the win. You found the loophole in the law. Oh, they can't move us if we're here. Well, they were, you big idiot. Okay, and so at the end of the day, I'm not entirely sure I understand what it is you accomplished. There's a viral video going around of a dude in like Daisy Dukes, and he's twerking, and they're throwing confetti at him, which, by the way, you probably shouldn't pollute the environment with confetti because that's hard to pick up. But I look at this video, and people are mocking it, understandably so. Who are you trying to win to your side? When you decide to disrupt the traffic, and by the way, they love to go, oh, you know what? The only people we're disrupting are the lobbyists, all the rich, privileged people. We're not going after the poor, except buses take those lanes. And so you're blocking out the buses of people who are just trying to get to their job. So you're getting in the way of them. You're getting in the way of people who are just trying to get home after a third shift or trying to get to work in the morning, already dealing with the horrible DC traffic. Then you've got the crazy singing, the crazy twerking like a loser. Who exactly are you trying to win over to your side? And tell me again how this works. Who was on the fence? I said, you know what? That twerking is what I needed. I legitimately needed that dude twerking in the Daisy Dukes for me to finally see things. You have opened my eyes.
Yeah, I had no clue what protest that was leading to. Like,
What are they protesting?
We want shorter shorts and want them now?
Maybe, because less consumption. Do not think that anyone here that was there this morning protesting, don't think that they care about the environment. They might care. It's on their list. But that's not what they were there for. They weren't there, number one, because of the environment. They were there because they were anti-capitalist. And there were so many of these signs about how capitalism kills, capitalism kills. And that's part of the reason why this movement isn't gaining sort of the middle ground. Like, these people are never going to get anybody in the middle, because what they're trying to do is only appeal to the folks who are already crazy on their side and want to join in on the twerking. But beyond that, you're not trying to stop environmental policies you don't like. You're trying to stop capitalism. This is more about being anti-capitalism than it is about being pro-environment. And all you have to do is look at the signs. One of the signs says, "Eat the rich, seriously." Julio Rosas from the Washington Examiner, he was actually there this morning. I posted some of his videos and photos on our Twitter feed, twitter.com/JasonRants. He's actually going to be on the show in about an hour from now, taking us through exactly what it is he witnessed. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I will say that. I didn't learn anything. It didn't move me at all. But it was fun because they're crazy. And sometimes crazy people doing crazy things is kind of funny.
Yeah, you had a lot of fun with that this morning. I'm glad that we got to get through that. That was good.
Oh, my God. Stop moving this. I'm in here. The cop's like, I know. That's why we're moving you. Oh, my God. But you're not supposed to. You're the gazpacho police. You mean Gestapo? And no, we're not. Gazpacho. I like soup. It's the Jason Rants Show. If you text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my latest blog. It's about how cowardly our friends over at Uber and Lyft are acting in the latest fight coming from the Seattle City Council and the mayor's office. They've decided, just frankly, to go to war with Uber and Lyft and hit them with all of these taxes that are going to hurt the drivers and going to hurt all of us, the customers. And I'm not really sensing any urgency in a fight. They're just kind of letting it go. They're doing some basic stuff that I don't think is enough. So if you want to help me end this ridiculous tax on Uber and Lyft, and really what it stands for, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. It's a better tax resolution hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrity news.
This kind of drives me nuts because despite having a relatively bad final season, most people seem to think that about Game of Thrones, last night it won Best Drama at the Emmys, while Veep, in its brilliant last season, the best show to ever be created in the history of TV, it ends up winning nothing.
And anyway, I'm not depressed. I just feel like I'm in a thick, dark fog, and everyone disappoints me, and nothing works out, and what's the point of anything anyway? And before you ask, it's not because I'm not sleeping, okay? Because I'm getting 14 hours of sleep a night.
She is my spirit animal, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, playing, of course, Selena Meyer, the president. Now, it wasn't a particularly interesting event last night because they didn't have any hosts. They decided to get rid of hosts because, frankly, as Sarah Silverman puts it in her interview with E! News, no one really wants to do it anymore.
They cut us off at the knees. There isn't even a host anymore in these shows. They don't want comedians to talk.
Did you offer to step in?
No, nobody wants to do it either. I mean, it's thankless.
Because what ends up happening, it's beyond thankless. It has nothing to do with being thankless. It's something, weirdly, that she personally experienced. People going into their backgrounds of anyone who's hosting, especially if they're a comedian, trying to find a joke at the time that wasn't considered offensive, and frankly isn't considered offensive in 2019 unless you're a crazy woke social justice warrior. They go back, they find it, and then they get mad. They did it with the Oscars and Kevin Hart. Sarah Silverman, as much as I can appreciate the comment she just made there on the red carpet, she's one of the people who's created this cancel culture. She loses a job because about a decade ago, she did a blackface skit. And it was a funny one, and it actually made the point about racism, okay? And she lost the job because of that, and she came back and like, yeah, I get it, you're not supposed to do that anymore. No, fight back! Fight back! You're fighting here when it's not your job? Oh, wow, they're cutting us off at the knees. Why don't you fight back when it happens to you instead of participating in the cancel culture? That's what we get. Now, with one exception last night, which was a Family Guy like skit that they did in between commercials, for the most part, it was just kind of tame.
Yeah, let's give everyone a minute to settle down. There we go. Okay, Meg, continue.
Wow, the Emmys.
I can't believe all the stars that came out for this.
Well, kids, in my day, the Emmys was always the night of the biggest stars and the best winners. It just seemed like every year it was Bill Cosby, Roseanne, Roseanne, Bill Cosby, Bill Cosby, Roseanne, and Bill Cosby. The Emmys has always been great at rewarding great people for great work. And who will be this year's Bill Cosby and Roseanne? Let's keep watching and find out.
Okay, I mean, it's mildly amusing. That was an all right skit, but that was kind of it, because you don't really have comedians doing anything.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It was meh.
I like Seth MacFarlane. I know he could have done a lot better. I'm sure he was held back a little bit from going full self.
Just a little bit. They probably weren't paying him for it. It's just like, hey, you know, we'll give you a little bit of some promotion here for Family Guy. Now, I guess we're supposed to celebrate, because did you know that history was made last night?
No.
Billy Porter won lead actor in a drama for a show called Pose on FX, which I've never actually heard of. He made history being the first openly gay black man to win Best Drama Actor. And when I saw that, and that's how it was presented in Variety and the LA Times, first I thought, is there like a closeted gay man who won Best Actor? And they'll say, well, we don't know, because maybe they just kept it to themselves. Then I was like, well, is there an openly gay black man who won Comedian Best Actor for a comp? Like, I just kept going through all these things. But because he's a first, we're supposed to pretend that in 2019, this is really, really important. Because had he not won, oh man, what does that say about us? It means that we don't like openly gay black men, I guess. That's how it's presented, as if it matters. How about this? Did Billy Porter do the best job as an actor? Awesome. Then he should have won. It's really that simple.
Oh my God, I gotta read. Oh my God, God bless you all. The category is love, y'all, love.
It was best actor for drama. Because if it was about love, then you're really sending the wrong message. It almost sounds like you expected to get that award because of your gender and your race and your sexual orientation, which seems demeaning to me. Like, I don't want people listening to my show because they're looking for a gay Jewish host. I want you guys listening to my show because you like the things I say and the way I say it and you find it informative and entertaining. I would like, if I ever were to win an award, of course, I'm not going to get one because maybe that's what I should do. Oh, so you hate Jews and gay people? Is that why you're not giving me an award? Oh, you hate conservatives. Got it.
I am so overwhelmed that I am so overjoyed to have lived long enough.
And by the way, he didn't see that overwhelmed. He had a whole list of people written down that he was going to thank during this acceptance speech, which we did have to cut down because it was like 14 minutes.
To see this day, James Baldwin said, took many years.
How many?
Of vomiting up all the filth that I had been taught about myself and halfway believed before I could walk around this earth like I had the right to be here. I have the right. You have the right.
Yeah, but by the way, no one is pretending in 2019 you guys don't have the rights to do anything. And by you guys, I mean literally privileged Hollywood folks. Because you're saying that in front of a group of multi-million, like there are billions of dollars worth of net worth there. You guys all have the right for everything. Every single person who showed up yesterday.
We all have the right.
Not you.
Please. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. We are the people. We as artists are the people that get to change the molecular structure of the hearts and minds of the people who live on this planet. Please don't ever stop doing that. Please don't ever stop telling the truth. I love you all. They're telling me to please stop. God bless you. God bless you.
Okay. Please don't do what he just said. Don't do that. I don't need you to change my molecular structure. Number one, that seems incredibly dangerous given most of you don't have college educations. But beyond that, can you just do a really good job in your TV show or your limited series? Because these are the Emmys. Can you maybe just do that one job really, really well and we'll reward you or not for that particular job? The reason why I think, especially in the movie world, but also in TV for some cases, you've got content that is celebrated because they like what it stands for and not necessarily the way that it does. Everything that Billy Porter said today and the way that they talked about it today makes me feel like they didn't give it to him because of the work that he did, but because of what they believe he stands for. That should be delivered as incredibly condescending. Or not delivered, that should be received as incredibly condescending. Billy Porter should not want to get this role, this award, because he happens to be gay and black. He should demand it because he did the best job of everyone who was nominated. Now, maybe that's the case and maybe it's not, but everything, because I haven't seen the show, but everything that he said and the way that this has been portrayed comes off as incredibly demeaning, incredibly condescending. And he should be the one who's offended by it, but instead he's embracing it. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. A lot of folks, including my next guest, thought it was going to be tough, but they had hoped that the Seattle Seahawks were going to be able to pull it off. Specifically because Drew Brees wasn't really there, and it didn't happen at all. In fact, it was a little bit of an upset surprise for a lot of us. Joining me in studio to talk about the Seahawks' loss to the Saints, Bob Stelm from our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. It seemed like the Seahawks had a lot of momentum going in, and then it just went away within the first drive.
Yeah, it was a bad day, really. I mean, we could sit here and list everything that went wrong. There were basically everything did. There were very few moments you could point to and say, all right, now they've got it going. Mm-hmm. Now they're rolling. I mean, they got into a deep hole. Their offensive line was bad. Their defensive line was bad. They had ill-timed penalties. Their special teams were not the least bit special. You name it. They didn't do it well. It was just a complete fail. The coaching was bad. The play calling was bad. The clock management was bad. It was just a disastrous, one of the worst I've seen in the Pete Carroll era.
And it was weird because, you know, it almost started with the bad omen of Coach Pete Carroll getting hit in the face with a ball. Right. You're always kind of wondering how that kind of gash can develop after, because it wasn't a hard football that was thrown, but it got to hit him at the right angle, at the right velocity. And he goes into it with bandages over his nose. It kind of just signaled what was going to happen for the Seahawks.
Yeah, it was a bad omen. Yeah,
right?
he got drilled by Cody Barton. There was a little steam on the ball, and a football's hard. I don't know if you felt a real football.
I'm just saying, it wasn't like the hardest throw I've ever seen. It was a deep gap.
Let me throw a real ball at you. Tell me how it feels. The point of the ball hit him in the nose. But yeah, it was, I mean, listen, it got off to a bad start there, and then it just, it was a hard one to explain. You and I talked last week, and I said, hey, this is going to be tougher than anybody thinks. This is still a good team. And Bridgewater was arguably the best backup in the league. But they didn't win because of Bridgewater. They did in a sense that he didn't do anything to hurt his team. He didn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. He didn't take a sack. He didn't do anything that hurt his team. He made the plays when he needed to, but it wasn't like they were just ripping the ball through the air left and right.
They also had some penalty issues that Seahawks generally have, which was just penalties, ill-timed, that could have hurt them, and yet we just didn't exploit it.
Yeah, and the Seahawks penalties came at
the worst times.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, the Saints missing a field goal, and, oh, the guy was lined up over the center, so, hey, fresh set of downs, and boom, they score. I mean, it was just like, you've got to be kidding me with some of the penalties. So it wasn't the number of penalties where it usually is, where you can look at the Seahawks and go, man, 11 penalties for 110 yards. I mean, that's crushing. It wasn't so much that. And in fact, this was the polar opposite of the Bengals game, where if you looked at the Bengals stat sheet in that game, they dominated the Seahawks just about every single category you could think. Time of possession, yards, passing yards, every
Seahawks
first down.
Efficient at that point.
The Seahawks forced a few turnovers, and they won the game. Now you look at this, and the Seahawks dominated the stats. If you want to look at yards, passing yards, Russell threw for over 400 yards, and you know they did all these things on the stat sheet that looked good. But the Saints won because of the critical mistakes made by the Seahawks.
Well, let's talk about a potential critical mistake, mostly because I haven't heard an explanation as to why, going into the half, Russell ends up not calling a timeout or spiking the ball or whatever, ends up throwing a very great pass, and then it was all for naught because there was no time left.
They should have called a timeout on the play before. After the play before.
So what was the explanation as to the timing of that? Was it just a screw-up?
There wasn't one. It was Pete saying, I screwed that up.
Yeah.
I mean, he owned it. I'll give him credit. You know, I sat in that room after the game and people said, hey, what happened at the end of the half there? And he's like, hey, yeah, I had a bad day out there. I screwed this thing up. And Pete can be a little, he'll use a lot of words and not say much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the term is for that, but he'll words. And you walk away going, wait, what did he say?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. The explanation, basically.
It was a bad call. It was
he
on
took
him.
Ownership. They had two timeouts. I think. He had 25, 26 seconds.
It was 25 seconds about,
completed that pass down the middle of their tight end. Should have called a timeout right there. But no, they get up to the line. They're getting everybody ready. Clock's ticking, clock's ticking. Complete a beautiful pass and catch to DK Metcalf. Gets them in the red zone where at minimum you kick a field goal. But if you had that time, you use the other timeout, maybe you score a touchdown. Instead, they get nothing. Half ends. Yeah. It was inexcusable.
Bob Stelton joining me in studio. We're talking about the painful Seahawks loss to the Saints over the weekend. Let's talk about, and I took just one note, of which I sent you many texts during the game. what's going on with our buddy there?
Chris Carson?
Yeah.
That's a tough one to explain.
This is the third game in a row, and the last time you and I chatted, I kind of made the joke of, I guess he's going to make one boneheaded play per game that really ends up costing the Seahawks until it doesn't, and then, you know, the good part in the Bengals matchup, horrible, horrible play that ends up fumbling, but then they still win. This time you fumble, and that was catastrophic for the Seahawks.
It was, and there's really no excuse for it. It's he was protecting. You saw him on that play as he's running. He put both hands on the ball. And he's
until he went down. And then I remember making a mental note because of the conversation we had. He clearly only had one hand around the ball as he was dropping.
Because he's bracing himself for the fall. And yes. Pete said this morning, he said, listen, we teach – you're not bracing yourself for the fall. You hang on to the ball both hands. And at the last second, he took one hand off. And give the defensive player credit. He swung arm around, hit it right on the ball. Perfect play by him. But Carson can't afford to do that. That's four. I know one of them was attributed to Russell. I've looked at it probably 8-9 times. Yeah.
Carson. He also slipped down how many times? Well, four. I get it.
Three
it's
slips
wet.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Three
it's
slips
wet.
Yesterday.
We got it. You know what happens in Seattle at CenturyLink? It gets wet and rain.
Yeah. He changed his cleats.
He slipped
again. I don't know what. I've got no explanation for that.
Is it possible for a person in that position to get too much in their head? Is that one of those positions that you can really sort of focus too much on the potential errors?
Certainly. Yeah. You can do that in any position. You fail in any position and you get the spotlight put on you, whether it's a penalty, whether it's a fumble, whether it's an errant pass in your name, your numbers being called out over the loudspeaker in front of 69,000. I don't care what position you're playing. You can get your own head.
It's the nature of the position being more likely than not to be involved in a play, at least with Carson. I mean, the same thing with a kicker. I mean, that's what the kicker does.
Right. Yeah, but it's true of Jermaine Ifedi, who's part of five guys on the line, but he finds a way to bring the spotlight on himself for negative reasons.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, yes, it's absolutely possible. Is he up in his own head? I don't know. He truly knows what's going on. Is it just horrible luck and guys are hitting the ball perfectly and, you know, we're just seeing a bad stretch, or is he tight? Is he too?
What do you think?
I think it could be both, because I've watched all of those fumbles, and you give credit to the defensive players. They're making plays. It's not like he's just being handed the ball and he's going, oh, whoops, I dropped it. I've got butter all over my arms. It's not like that. But it's not something we saw last year where guys are still punching at the ball and going after the ball, and he's a contact runner, and he's running right into the middle of the pile, and he's fighting for every last yard. That tends to open yourself up to those moments more, and you didn't see that last year. So. Yeah. It's a tough one. I think it's probably a little bit of both. And he's certainly got it in his mind now. If it wasn't before this game, there's no question it's in his mind now. And whatever they need to do to fix it, I don't know what that is.
I don't tweet about the Seahawks all that often. I sent one tweet this weekend, and it was directed towards him. He shouldn't be such a key figure in this lineup right now.
Well, here's the problem is that Rashad Penny was not active yesterday.
Yes, he was injured. Hurt.
Yeah, he hurt his hamstring in a walkthrough. So that hurt, right? So
Carroll broke his whole nose off. He still
he went to CJ Procise, who's been a guy who's seen very little time in his 3 years prior to this season, because he can never stay healthy. Now he was able to do some things, but the problem is they got so far behind they had to just start throwing the ball. So the running game eliminated itself on some level, and then the score dictated that they were going to pass the ball instead of running it.
So what's your takeaway from this match? Can we just say, you know what? Every team has one truly bad go.
Flush it. Yeah. I don't know what they learned from it. Certainly they're going to go
through. They're not unbeatable at home.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you didn't dominate the first two games. You won by a total of 3 points. So, and you did not play well against the Bengals. You did get a win, but you didn't play great in that game. You didn't dominate the Steelers. Now, that's a good win because it was on the road, and I know Big Ben got hurt, but their backup played well. That's a quality win. You haven't really played great yet. You've played great in spots, and individuals have had some great games. But as a team, You haven't had that great Seahawks game yet. Now, I would caution everybody who's ready to jump off the bridge. They're 2-1. You thought they'd be 2-1 at this point because I think most people chalked up the Pittsburgh game as a potential loss.
Yeah.
When you're going through, going,
fair
okay,
enough.
Win, loss, win, loss. They started out last year 0-2. So at this point, you were talking about a 1-2 team, and you made the playoffs. So before everybody
everyone
panicked,
calm down.
I understand how bad it was. I was there.
It was an awful dumpster fire game, but okay, fine.
Yeah.
Fair enough. They head to Arizona this Sunday. We'll have you back on Friday to help preview that. By the way, you are correct that it was 2-0 with Sounders and DC United, except it was DC United 2, Sounders.
Oh, I didn't say that?
No, you thought, no, I thought I said DC.
I knew the score.
No, that's why when I said, really, you think they're going on the road to DC and winning 2-0? Okay. But that's the difference. You're better off analyzing football than I am.
Yeah.
I'm way better off at analyzing soccer, the true football.
I don't know why you asked me about soccer.
I thought I'd throw that in every once in a while. Bob Stelton from 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks for stopping by.
You got it, man.
Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Live in the online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. There was some controversy over at the LGBTQ panel that most of the candidates on the Democratic side took part in. It was mostly virtue signaling, nonsense, and pandering. But at one point, there was a columnist who was handling the questions for some of the candidates, and she got mad at Joe Biden. Joe Biden said that she was nice, and she got mad. Her name is Liz Lenz of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. She's a columnist there. And weirdly, the comment coming from Joe Biden was meant to be a little sardonic because she was mad that he once called Vice President Mike Pence a decent guy, a nice guy, which I guess you're not supposed to do towards people who are deeply religious on the left. They don't like it when you say nice people are nice people. I suppose Joe Biden was supposed to lie and say, oh my God, I hate Mike Pence. He's the worst. But the way that he responded is now being deemed sexist.
You have also praised Vice President Mike Pence as a decent guy.
Oh, my God.
Oh. You're a lovely person.
Get it? It's sarcastic. It's a joke.
Just asking the questions that people want to know.
No one, by the way, cares about the question she's about to ask. Certainly not the way that she's asking it.
By the way.
Yeah, all right. So.
Yeah.
So I guess it goes without saying Pence is opposed to LGBTQ rights. So.
That's actually not true, though. He's not opposed to LGBTQ rights. He disagrees on some points coming from the LGBT community, many of which I disagree with him on. He's wrong on a lot of this stuff. In my opinion, he's not a bad person, nor is he against rights. Remember, he is close friends with Richard Grenell, our openly gay U.S. ambassador to Germany. Someone who's a bigot who hates everything about the LGBTQ community. They generally don't befriend members of the LGBTQ community or put them in positions of power like he's doing with Richard Grenell, who, by the way, is on a global campaign to end the criminality associated with homosexuality in certain countries that actually punish people for being gay. He's fighting against that.
The question that arises from these is, how can LGBTQ people trust that you won't compromise on issues that put them at risk in order to reach across the aisle to people like Pence?
To people like Pence. I mean, he answers, and I'll play a portion of the answer the way that he's supposed to, which is, you can disagree with someone on even fundamental things, such as the topic that we're having a conversation about right now, and yet still have respect for that person. There are lots of people who are in the Senate or in the House who hate each other's politics, but like each other as human beings, and that's okay.
The fact of the matter is, you might recall, I'm the first person nationally to come out and say in front of everyone that I didn't have to go through any period of adjustment. I came out on Meet the Press in support of gay marriage before anybody else did nationally that was on the scheme, number one.
So he means someone who was actually in office at the time in the presidency, and he's right. I mean, also, by the way, I know that this ticks off people like Liz Lenz a little bit, but President Trump, then candidate Trump, is the first person to go into the White House actually having already supported gay marriage. Remember when Obama was nominated, when Obama was campaigning, when Obama was actually president, for the first part of his two terms, he was against gay marriage. He was against gay marriage. Hillary Clinton, same thing. When she was running, she was against gay marriage. But again, she's an LGBTQ icon, I guess.
And the reason I did is I didn't have to evolve. I had a father who I remember dropping me off when I was a senior in high school to get an application for a job at the city hall to be a lifeguard. And I saw two men in our town square dressed in their suits kiss one another and go in different directions. And I turned and looked at my dad. And he said very simply, he said, Joey, it's simple.
That was hot. That's not what he said.
They love each other, period. That's the only question.
Okay. He was woke when he was seven. There's no way, by the way, that that memory is true. There's no way that he remembers that. Because he's right now, just Google real quick, tell me how old he is. How old is Joe Biden?
112?
Yeah, okay. So there's no way that at 112 years old, he's going to remember something that happened when he was seven or however old he was. Now, ironically, because I know we're running out of time, I want to jump into this. Liz Lenz. By the way, what's all with this disease at the end of the names all of a sudden? I thought that was my thing. And all of a sudden, Liz Lenz, she's got two Z's. One Z is acceptable. Two is a little bit too much. She ends up getting called out for being racist, which just puts a smile on my face. Because she's like the woke person going after Joe Biden. He's sexist because he said, you're nice. Well, she questioned Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren on the exact same topic. Two candidates who had the exact same position. And yet she was way more aggressive with Kamala Harris than she was with Elizabeth Warren. Here's the Kamala Harris question.
During your time as Attorney General in California, you did send a brief seeking to deny gender affirmation surgery for trans inmates. You stated that at the time you were just enforcing the existing law. But with this history, the question is, how can trans people trust you will advocate for them and not just enforce discriminatory laws?
How can they feel like you're going to be on their side? And not an evil bigot. But now, listen to the same question with the same content at the same position with Elizabeth Warren, the white woman.
In 2012,
yes,
you wrote that you did not support gender-affirming surgery for trans inmates.
Yep.
In January of this year, you reversed your opinion and said you had changed on this issue, which is great. But it's so great. Many people in America haven't, as you were just talking about. So here in Iowa, a Republican-led legislature changed our civil rights laws to deny trans people the right to gender-affirming surgery under Medicaid. So you just said we have to get everybody on board. How do we even do that?
I love that. Elizabeth Warren, tell us how everybody else can change the way you did. Kamala Harris, how can we trust you? She's racist. Jace Rancho.